We are over here. I'm your host, Chris Derdix. We're listening in today on a conversation about business and what it can accomplish. Joining us for this discussion today are Duke Stump and Gregor Barnum. Let's start with some introductions.
I'm Gregor Barnum. I am the director of Higher Consciousness at Seventh Generation, a consumer products goods company in Burlington, Vermont. I think the defining thing that happened to me was in 1967 when I grew up in a family where there was lots of money, and the family actually, the company became intimately involved in defense. They bought a company that was building airplanes for the Vietnam War, and I was an active participant in the SDS, which was the Students for a Democratic Society, and we wanted to stop that war, and all of a sudden, the food I was eating was coming from, the money was coming from all of this warfare. And, you know, I realized that if I, you know, the beauty of being a rebel was so much fun. There were no rules. You basically, I just could feel in my guts that, you know, you could just keep breaking down things. Friedrich Schiller, the old German romantic, had this sense that it's not about morality. It's about bringing in this deep sense of beauty in the world. And I can't help but want to bring the beauty back. You know, why I'm in the business world, I have no idea. It seems so much like, you know, Roman conquering all the time. Another defining moment is when my son was diagnosed with autism and I began to see the world of specialness in people. Because all this, you know, we walk into these educational systems and we walk into all these places and we get formed by them. And when you have a kid who's outside the form that has this diagnosis hanging over him, you know, you can't help but wonder, is it the diagnosis or where's the beauty in this child? So that was another defining point. I think a third piece of this, and I think that this has been for me in the last few years, I had such a love of my grandfather who created this business, and I don't think he would have wanted the business to have done this much destruction. And so I'm living in this world right now where I'm trying to, in some sense, cure the karma that was created by, you know, the state the business has done. You know, business and the economic world have created a world where ultimately, you know, if we continue on the next seven generations, there's going to be a lot of questions. And, you know, I'm not going to go to the apocalyptic, but you know, you kind of sense that in some ways we got to do something.
My name is Duke Stump. I guess the best way to understand is I'll start young. I grew up in Chicago on a farm. My parents were high school teachers. And even though we didn't have much financially, I always felt like there was an abundance. And I think it was just living on land without fences was a beautiful thing. So I took a lot of different turns, but I really ended up in, quote unquote, the brand world, which I would love to find a different world for that term for that. But I spent a long time at Nike. People always say, hey, what was your take from Nike? And it really allowed me to see the beauty of the human spirit, not so much from a pro athlete perspective, but a lot of weekend warriors and what they were able to do. I just found the achievement when the human spirit is driven is actually incredible. So that was my Nike experience. And then I went to this little darling of a place. What I always say was the Lilliputian amongst the giants was called Seventh Generation. And you know, at the time, I think it was 50 people, $50 million roughly, but it was this place of possibility. And what I really learned there was the art of compassion. And that when you actually add that into the mix, it's amazing. Not only the community it creates internally, but externally. And that there is a really a kind of a new currency around not only inspiration and empowerment, what I learned from Nike, but this sense of compassion. And that unleashed for me kind of this desire, which I've always had, to go on my own. And I created this thing called North Star Manifesto, which in a broad brushstroke is, you know, my goal is to create the conditions for cultures to thrive in a way that leadership, humanity, and the general culture push themselves in a way that optimizes a new sense of what's possible. So it's working like things with biomimicry or community schools in South Africa or local harvest, primarily smaller, medium, private enterprise, but I also will work with larger organizations as long as there's a will to create that better space.
Excellent. I'm so excited to have you guys talk to us and to give people the opportunity to listen in on a conversation between people who have passion and skill for business, but not just, you know, not just making money, but for doing something profound and beautiful even in the world. So thanks for joining us, and thanks for spending your time. The question that's going to start our conversation is this: when all the conditions are right, what can business accomplish?
I'll take a stab. So one of my many mentors is Janine Benyos, who had founded Biomimicry, which is the sense of nature as a mentor. I mean, nature creates conditions conducive to life every day. Simple thought, right? Or simple statement. Creating conditions conducive to life. And so if you think about business, imagine if actually business could do that. That to me would be this place of nirvana. And I'm talking not just quote unquote products, I'm talking about people, you know, allowing people to really feel empowered, to be inspired. You know, I'm talking about whatever you do create and make in a way that actually is creating conditions conducive to life, but looking at it holistically and systemically, saying as a culture and a business, imagine if you could do that. That would be, for me, a beautiful, beautiful day.
Yeah. No, I mean, just to play off that for a bit, you know, does nature know the word accomplish? It's an interesting word. And so there's this interesting tension with that, which is, you know, I haven't read the book. I've always wanted to get it, but someone said there's a book called 1491. So the year before, you know, before the Big Bang, really. And it talked about we don't realize that we are a part of nature too, and how much the Native Americans at that point so deeply worked with nature in a way to, in some ways, bring more wealth to the area. I mean, given that she was just growing as she would and does as she did, these Native American forces were actually building more wealth into the area that both helped nature and helped their culture. And so I always want to come back to the environmentalists, because they come with this theme, which is like, yeah, if man wasn't or woman weren't here, the earth would be better. And I just don't think we see the importance of how we're an important part of the evolution of this planet. And we don't know what that is. I mean, we keep thinking we have to accomplish something, which is create less chaos in culture so we don't all go into collapse, or make sure you feed everybody. But we're so accomplish-oriented that we lose that sense of what you were just saying, of where is the deep wealth and well-being in our connection?
Yeah, it's funny. I came across this poet, David White, out of San Francisco, and he talks about soul, which is... I still want to be able to articulate this in the most meaningful way for others, but he suggests it's really this sense of belonging to something other than yourself. So to the workplace community, to the local community, to the global community. But when you have that level of respect and empathy for that element, then you have soul. But it's the ability to think beyond just yourself and even just your local community to something far bigger. And to see how everything is interconnected. And so I guess for me, it's the soul piece, and how we all hold that and interpret that is an interesting thing. But to me, nature has soul. Nature doesn't maximize things, it optimizes things. And I find real beauty in that. What would it mean for us to always optimize experiences versus maximize experiences?
So, and that one, let me just play with that one for a sec.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the picture that came up when you were saying that was, if we could even get to that point of holding what soul is, I mean, it's still that abstract
thing. It's very nebulous.
And I almost, you know, the picture that keeps coming across when you walk down an aisle in a supermarket and you're at that point of purchase and you think about it from the standpoint of, is there soul in that product? Because the soul will be not only in the design, but you'll actually feel... you know, what repercussions happened to get this to market. And, you know, you'd actually feel that experience so profoundly within your soul because, it's all a part of us.
Right.
And it's just amazing. I absolutely think that, you know, whether it's, I think people do feel this so unconsciously in their world right now that it's just, how do you bring that to the surface? I don't think it's gone. I just think if we could just begin to clear out all the anxiety and clutter just a moment and think, in that moment, people really realize that they're touching the soul of Earth and other people and all the different things that, you know, that we're all connected, going back to what you were saying before.
Right. Well, it's even, I mean, I'm a big fan of Michael Pollan. I think it was in Defense of Food, he said, food is not a thing, it's a relationship. And if we all approached everything in that vein, that I'm going to support and embrace, and I'm not just saying consume because that's only one avenue, but everything in my life, I'm really going to try and seek things where there's a relationship versus just things. My sense is that that would create a huge shift in thinking and, more importantly, behavior and how we hold things. I mean, my wife and I do it. We really do. Like we ask ourselves, do we have a relationship with this thing? And if it's just a thing, then how or where can we discover something like that where it's a relationship? I'm passionate about CSA farming. And Pollan's right. When you work the fields, you know, and CSA is community-supported agriculture, but when you work a field and you see that food on your table later, that's a profound experience. You know, the food on your table is not a thing. It's a relationship. So everybody who's, and once again, I'm actually pro-business. I think business can be a model of good. But how do you create it in a way where does consider the whole, how it's made, where it's made, why it's made?
I totally agree. Now, I just, as you're talking, this is this looming thing this question that keeps, so the question was, you know, we're still focused on this word business. When you think about, I'm not sure I always know what that word means. I mean, when you think about the identity of corporations, I mean, it's not a great idea from the standpoint of the responsibility piece and the way it's, you know, it's in some ways, it hasn't taken a relationship form. And I mean, CSA is not really, you can really feel the heart and breath of the human soul in the pulling of food.
Absolutely.
But there's something about the form called business, which, you know, that's part of me that wants to change that framework a little bit. What are we really talking about when we say business? And is there a different form where that relationship thing comes so obvious in front of us? Because in the present form, it's not there all the way. There's this disconnect.
Right.
Even people who live in business, I mean, it's just most people feel that kind of disconnect from whatever that thing is.
Right.
And I'm not sure what the next evolution of that thing is.
So let me ask you this. So you're obviously, you always have a great antenna for things that are out there. Do you see or recognize things, or I should say relationships, that kind of speak to this?
So the cooperative thing, that's why that Mondragon thing I was talking to you about,
right,
where I begin to feel the heart and soul of the people in the midst of these cooperatives, because they're people reaching into it. It's not like one business competing against another business, competing against the market. It's all of this kind of old Roman kind of mentality. And I just feel like, how do we, the cooperative is people working with each other and beginning to work together to begin to sense what the new wealth is in the sense of each of the places that they go into. So they have this sense of relationship. I mean, I love that word. So that, you know, when you go into the relationship you have with this place, you're really working with the cooperatives of all those around you. So you're holisticking at that point. And suddenly you begin to see all this interweaving. That word came up before, like dialogue. We're all in deep dialogues with each other rather than I'm going to sell this and I'm going to beat your, you know, price point and you're going to, you know, it's so funny. You know, we just, you know, the example would be, we just did this commercial, which was first time we did an ad and, you know, protecting, you know, planet Earth, and Clorox flared up. You know, who the hell are you to even suggest that, you know, our chemistry will hurt people. And all of a sudden, they were like almost sadistically angry. And everybody in the company goes, yeah, we got them pissed off. So we're like, well, that's not really a great dialogue, right?
Right.
But that's the game. And so I sit back with it and go, it's damn interesting, just as I watch the evolution of that. But I think when you and I get into dialogue, we're trying to, in some ways, move that one into its next evolution. And how do you actually begin to get the shift in the human character to be seeing the pictures, especially the pictures you see in business? I mean, I always connected to how you saw the world of marketing, where I don't usually do that with the marketing thinking.
Yeah, I mean, I will say this two things. One is and I've always said this, I don't know what the word marketing means. I really don't. And the same goes true a lot of times for the word innovation, even sustainability. It can be a paralyzing dialogue. And so for me, it was always, how do you optimize the resonance and relevance for those you serve? Mm. And just holding it differently. And that meant, I love that because it was a design question. It wasn't saying, okay, here's your marketing playbook. But it was like you had to have an incredible level of empathy and deep knowing for not only the community in which you served, but the bigger picture around what was happening in the globe, right? The global community. And then that would define kind of your strategy design. And what I loved about that, it was there was no set answer. It was an artistic expression. How do you optimize that resonance and relevance? It was just, I always get hung up on the marketing thing because it always, and rightfully so, it sounds like you're selling something versus creating a relationship. And, you know, how do you create a relationship?
And I would totally agree with you on this marketing thing that, I mean, marketing is such a noun. It doesn't do anything. It's sort of, it's hurtful when you say the word. But when you get this sense of even that resonance, when I kept hearing that word, of course, relevance was a good one too, but resonance has this thing of, you get this sense of what the human's about. And I think, for me, I constantly look for what's the design where that flourishing will actually happen. How do you actually get a movement so that business takes that form?
Well, that's the beauty actually of a bonfire, right, is so often you hear, hey, we got to go after and attract and get this and get that. And my thing is, if you really are good, right, the bonfire part is simply you're going to create a sense of evangelism where people want to bring wood to the fire, i.e. conversation.
Yeah.
Right? And they want to be a part of that. I mean, there's great examples. Patagonia is an amazing company for me. And its ability to really galvanize and mobilize people around this common conversation. And then the soul part is simply, once again, that sense of belonging to something other than yourself. And when you can merge those two things, you know, the notion of wanting to do the right thing and do well are not mutually exclusive. And there's so many signals that suggest that there's a shift happening right now that's in many ways invisible to so many people. But if you really listen to the verve and the tune of what's happening with you, if it's like, hey, you know what? You created this world. I'm not really digging it. I'm going to create my own space. It's very entrepreneurial.
Local.
They're about collaboration. You know, we are about silos. They're about this open source collaboration nation. I mean, it's an amazing dynamic. And for those companies that ignore that, I'm not a futurist, but it just seems in many ways that there is that old light dimming and this new light's burning bright. And it is, if you can listen to youth and through in a new way, I think we'd all be shocked at what we could discover.
Honestly, the reason that I'm interested in asking this question is I have Weltschmerz, which is a fancy German word, which always makes things more real, right?
Yeah,
if you have a fancy German word for them. But it's a combination of the word world and pain, like that what you would hope things are isn't how they actually are. And when I look at business, you know, I get down. And I feel like you guys have kind of struck that same chord. I would love to point people in the direction of this general movement that you're saying, you know, that more collaborative and creating the conditions for life. And where would somebody look for that if they wanted to follow that up or.
Can I reframe one thing real quickly?
Yeah, yeah.
So actually, I don't think it's for me, it's pain about business. I actually am inspired about possibility. And so I accept what is, and I accept the fact that there's no perfect place. And I accept the fact that we all have warts in one way. I find right now there's too much of the dour, somber, disillusioned conversations. And hey, I accept that that's real. But for me, it's more the lens of, man, look out there in the emerging future and what do you see? And I see, candidly, I'm doing what I'm doing because I have two little girls, 11 and 9. I want there not to be one Patagonia. I want there to be thousands and thousands of cultures just like that, that care, you know, they answer the one question that we always used to ask at Seventh Generation. What does the world need most that we're most qualified to deliver? Mm. And that's what drives their every deliberation. That's what I want to see. And so I'm actually excited. I mean, to me, it's like this really cool adventure where how do you actually nurture and cultivate those seeds of cultures like that? That really, instead of being the exception, all of a sudden where you wake up in 10 years, like, holy smokes, we've transformed how we look at business because of all these beautiful seeds that were planted years ago.
I do feel pain at certain times. And when I do, I look at it from the standpoint of what just woke up in me. And when it wakes up in me, I don't want to sit there in the drift of it, which ends up in desperation.
Right.
I want it to turn into, what did I just see that I don't know, that's just showing up as pain, but that's again coming in from the resonance? Because I want to be that sensitive to picking up the vibes out there. And it's not always healthy. It can be painful. So that's another piece. And the other piece, and I want to make sure we, and I'm playing with this framework right now because I, as much as we're focused on the economic sphere, you know, we got to look at the whole system called culture. The political sphere right now is pounding. I mean, when you look at what the political world is doing right now and what the civil society world is, I mean, I really think that there is I'm actually borrowing from Nicanor Perlis, who's actually running for the president for the Philippines right now.
Amazing gentleman.
Amazing
guy.
Who
we met years ago. Well, you've known him longer, but we met at a workshop in
Seoul. Seoul, yeah. And it was interesting because he keeps holding how you need to both separate, because, you know, the economic sphere and the political sphere are merged in lots of ways. But how do we keep these spheres flourishing? I mean, that's the world that's really interesting. The other world, which I don't see as flourishing, that I'm starting to see come back in these new local movements, like what's happening in Detroit, like what's happening in this Menlo experiment, North Hollywood. Cleveland is another one, this Mondragon thing, where I'm starting to feel this sense of people coming together in conversations, looking to see how to begin to tap, and just running on the words you were using before. I mean, there is so much potential and possibility in all the broken people from the old economy right now that are being lifted a bit in this Phoenix feeling. Bucky used to say least used resources on the planet is all of this human consciousness that's getting wasted in these very confined, the boxes we keep creating. It's happening out there. There is a phoenix happening. You ain't going to find it in the media. And you got to go and walk into these communities and look into their eyes and hear their conversations. And it's starting to happen.
That's actually what I love about a lot of the youth. I mean, and I've traveled around the world over the last couple of years, and it's no different regardless of where you're at. There's always this common thread, which is an unwillingness to settle for anything other than something which they love to do, that's going to give them joy, something that's going to allow them to grow, where they're going to feel the place that they want to feel empowered and inspired. And if they have to go on their own, they'll go on their own. There's this woman, Maggie Doyne, who created something called the Blink Now Foundation. And she was doing a gap year between high school and college, grew up in New Jersey. She's cruising around. They're doing the Fiji thing. And then she gets to Nepal and was like, whoa, I need to be here. All these orphan kids, someone needs to tend to this flock, if you will. She built an orphanage and she lives with 26 kids. It's more of this mindset of, I'm not going to settle. I'm not going to just take a job for the sake of taking a job, but I'm going to do something I love, that I'm passionate about, that's going to give me the empowerment and inspiration I need, and at the same time answers that fundamental question around, you know, I want to make a difference. What does the world need? And God, what can I do? I mean, just the other day, I was at this event in LA where Scott Harrison from Charity Water spoke, which is the story is too long to go into, but in essence, this former New York City club promoter, the hedonistic lifestyle, just one day wakes up and says, man, this is going the wrong direction. Goes to, joins a mercy ship in Liberia and is forever changed and sees the value of what clean water can give to a billion people and makes it his life's mission. But he did this. He said, man, the world needs water. I'm a club promoter. I'm going to create a nonprofit in a way that nobody's seen a nonprofit created. And the thing is flourishing, right? He's not he's unabashed. I'm a promoter, but he does it in a way that's so real, and it's trust. I mean, trust is a big part of this conversation, right? Who do you trust to have a relationship with? And he does it in the most amazing, transparent way. But I go back to reframing it less about business, less about people, but a mindset that allows these conditions to flourish. And I see it more with youth, but I also see it other people like, hey, I want to join that party. Even if you've, you know, people are going through these like life shifts at 40 or 50 or 60 or whatever, like, I got to be a part of that. That's just an amazing journey that I somehow have to tap into.
They're not just younger folk. This Menlo Labs, Tracy Houston and Dave Flanagan, you know, these are older folk. And, you know, both of them are from the car industry. I mean, worked big time at Nissan and Ford, high positions in these big companies. Again, driven by this thing inside. And I just want to keep emphasizing something that keeps coming through. You know, you've said it a lot, and I'm playing with it a lot, is that it's not, doesn't just happen. You know, you get this thing and you're not sure what to do with this thing. And you got to know that you've got to spend some time figuring out all the way to bring these forces in. You know, she did with the orphanage. It took a lot of design break.
Absolutely.
And she failed. I imagine she did. I'm watching this with lots of things. This word failure, which always ends up in this sort of like bleak, like, oh, I failed. What beauty there is to this failure for what form is trying to come through.
Amen. Amen. I mean, it's one of the principles within Bonfires with Soul, which is embrace glorious mistakes. And so often in culture, it's like, hey, there's only win or lose. The ability for those to be resilient. I mean, Scott Harrison can tell you the stories of how Charity Water, there was moments where the last dollar was about to dry up. And then he found this angel philanthropist that said, hey, I believe in it. Here's enough money to keep it going for a year. The will to prototype in a way that you're not restricted by, oh my God, there's only win or there's only fail. And that is the beauty, I think, of this new generation of thinking, which is, regardless of age, hey, I'm going to go out there and create.
This is a fantastic place to pause because I had never used this word before, but the opening question, it's a prototype, a question that got us to cover quite a bit of ground and to tend some space that now maybe there's some fertile ground for some flourishing thoughts and actions. But if we were going to get together again and talk, if you were going to have a conversation like this, what's come to mind that you'd like to follow up with, or that, you know, that the question is brought to mind that you think would be important to continue thinking about and continue working on?
I have an ongoing question. And this is, you know, the ongoing question is, you know, I think that the overall vibe in this conversation has been one on possibility, inspiration, this whole sense of, you know, bringing in new forms. And I'm always so deeply interested in the level of judgment and the level of cynicism new ideas have in people. And Not that I want to be judgmental of the judgment or cynical of the cynicism, but I think everybody is possibility. And I haven't been good at how to stage these conversations in ways that taps into the inspiration and possibility in others. So that's that question of how do we stage the conversation a little differently because all of us have that judgment and cynicism thing flowing. That suddenly it becomes like, yeah, maybe I don't need that right now.
So for me, it's almost the inquiry is a little bit of, hey, if what are the principles required for things to flourish in a way that it would inform your behavior, which would create shifts? Because what I love about a lot of times with principles is it doesn't tell you what to do. You have to think about it. Mm-hmm. You can make it your own, so it's empowering. But it also, in many ways, because you're thinking about it, allows you to see. For me, the burning question right now is, you know, what does it take to create conditions for things to thrive and flourish?
Gregor, Duke, thanks for letting us listen into your conversation.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, it's been great.
Thanks for listening in. If you enjoyed this conversation, connect with us online at weoverhear.com, where you'll find information about the program, as well as links to our Facebook and Twitter pages. Over Here is made possible in part by the Lucky Duck Foundation, a philanthropic organization committed to helping charitable causes through building awareness, raising funds, encouraging volunteerism, and promoting community leadership. More information about the Lucky Duck Foundation can be found online at luckyduckfoundation.org.